And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to Stars Matter, a recruiting podcast from The Athletic. Tonight, special edition number 2. I'm here with Ari Wasserman, Sam Kahn, Max Olson, all from The Athletic. Earlier today, Ari and I hopped on for a few minutes to talk about the big news of the day, Arch Manning committing to the University of Texas. Guys, in the world of recruiting, doesn't get much bigger than this. Ari, we talked to you a lot today. I'm going to let the other guys jump in first. Max Olson, I guess not a shock. We saw this, you know, there's a lot of smoke coming out of the weekend, but what was your reaction? Ari said earlier he was lying on the couch with his shirt off. I was taking a bite of a chicken parm sandwich for lunch when this happened. What were you doing?
Yeah, one of those like rare moments where I wasn't just staring at TweetDeck for like an entire morning. So like I think I was late by 5-10 minutes and seeing the tweets, which doesn't happen very often.
Right.
So that was upsetting. I thought the first podcast was the most hyperbolic podcast in the history of American podcasts, personally. But
is that a compliment?
No, it's just that's what we get on Stars Matter. That's what we're bringing. So I look forward to bringing us back down to earth here a little bit with now that Sam and I are here to spit some facts. But no, it was it's funny, like, and you guys hit on it earlier, like when there's a lack of information, like actually coming from Arch and the family, then you get kind of speculation. And I think probably all three sides of this, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, all probably are like feeling pretty good about where they stand as far as they know, right? In terms of just like, I think we've done everything right. I think the visit went well, all that kind of stuff. But I remember even going back to like January, Texas folks were really confident that it was going really well. And so it was hard to know like how real that was. But pretty incredible they actually pulled it off.
Yeah, and Sam, I'll give you credit's the right word because, you know, we didn't really know, but I think we had you on the pod a few months ago, read your stuff. That was the first time where I really thought this Texas has a very good shot because you seem to be getting good vibes from the Texas camp.
Yeah, and Max, you were there with me at AFCA in January, mm-hmm. and I think I mentioned to you, I won't say his name because don't want to out him, but a certain staffer at Texas came up to me and said, we're going to get we're going to do better than A&M's class in 2023. Ooh. Like that was number one. Number two was we're going to get Arch Manning and Ruben Owens.
Yeah.
They've got one of the two. Ruben's going to Louisville as of right now. We'll see how that goes in the next 6 months now that Arch is committed. But there was a lot of confidence coming from the Texas staff from the outset of this thing. And I'll tell you guys, and Ari, I know you've talked to Nelson Stewart as well. From the time that Arch visited Texas back last June, I've gotten pretty strong indication from him that they were just knocking out of the park in terms of relationships. Sark and AJ Milwee building the relationship with Arch Manning, and also not just staying on top of him, but I think really just feeding into his love for the game and X's and O's. I think during his visit last year, Nelson told me that they sat down with him and went through like install and details and how they do all the stuff offensively. And it sounds pretty, you know, mundane, but I don't know that you have to do that with every recruit. Not every recruit necessarily wants to see that on a visit, but Arch is a different type of recruit. He wants to be involved in that. He's a student of the game. And I think AJ Milwee and Sark kind of fed into that. And it was just a perfect match of let's be aggressive and stay on top of him, but let's also hit all the things that we know he's interested in while also giving him the space to make the decision.
All right, before we go to Ari, a little housekeeping here. Texas's class, I didn't even think about looking this up earlier. Texas's class is 8 commits. It's up to number 19. Don't worry about that because that's only 8 commits. 6 of the 8 are top 300, 2 top 100 players, Arch and wide receiver Ryan Niblett from Houston. Average player rating is 92.07, which is 6th. Behind Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, I have UCLA. That's not UCLA. And Notre Dame. So I'm who's my typo though there. I'll have to figure that out.
Might but be so, USC because they're 92 points.
Yeah, USC. I can't type. Yeah. Ari, so after you put a shirt on, what was your quick reaction to that?
That was not the name drop, but I was like interviewing Mike Elko about recruiting to Duke.
Oh, yeah, we talked about this. Ari had to break the news to Mike Elko that he did not get
our fan. That didn't happen. It was right after we hung up. But, you know, this is like a world record for longest I've gone on a podcast without speaking. This is going to be a highly rated show, I think. The reaction to me is just like, you know, for all the jokes and all the things that people like to say about Texas, like it has juice, you know, like, and even if it's been down and, you know, they inexplicably lose to Kansas or they go 5-7. I mean, it is a brand that carries weight. You know, it's not like he committed to some random team that's never won anything. Like, I mean, this is a program that by and large was at the top five jobs in America on every national writers list for the past 15 years until recently. So, you know, there are two types of recruits, I think, at least ones that I've come across in my career when they're this highly regarded. And it's one, players who are most interested in going to a machine that they think is going to pump them out, which is great. It's probably what I would do. And going to a place B as somebody who's going to forge their own path and do something different. So if Arch Manning actually goes to Texas, you know, when this is all said and done, and I anticipate that he will, becomes a starter there, leads them to a playoff, and becomes the number one overall pick in the draft, I think that you could make the case that that's one of the most remarkable things any single recruit has probably done, you know? And the fact of the matter is that this individual commitment is as important to Texas as any commitment has ever been to any program ever. But I'm super excited to see what this means for guys like Jonte Cook and for Reuben Owens down the line and these guys in Texas that are, you know, top 100 players that, hey, might take an extra visit to Texas now because of what this means. So to me, I think it's a bombshell in the best possible way for Texas. And, you know, I've been humiliated over and over again in this feed talking about how I think Texas is, you know, a better ceiling than Oklahoma and how I don't understand why they don't win 11 games every year. But it's just like, I'm going to refrain from saying Texas is back, but like, this is like the first major step to having legitimate conversations about the direction they're at. Am Max shaking his head? Like, don't fall for it. Like, I don't know.
I just think like the fog of fatherhood and like all we've gone through in the past year, I think you're forgetting you've said these literal exact words about Quinn Ewers committing to Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Not very long ago, which he ended up decommitting from, but I feel like it's the exact same script.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now they've got both. So let me tell you this right now.
The two saviors, do they cancel each other out?
One of these two
is that
guys,
like a double negative.
If one of these two guys doesn't make it, if they both go there and they turn into, you know, middle of the road guys or transfer guys in Texas, I will never even watch Texas
better than
again.
Those guys. For
yeah, Malik yeah. Murphy. Well, actually, yeah. Yeah, this is all said and done. Malik Murphy just turns into Dante Culpepper and just, you know, mashes people. That'd be great. But if like one of the guys that are on this roster right now or headed to this roster don't do it, then at what point do you just hang up the phone and just like, this is never going to happen? Because like, is this the first time in recruiting history, correct me if I'm wrong, if the number one overall player in the country as a quarterback went to the same school as the number one player and quarterback? I think this might be. And I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's a good question.
And I also don't know, too, like how you look at it, because he technically is a 2021 kid now, I think, but he should be a 22 kid.
Yeah, the reclassifying made a huge difference in this, too. I'm not sure Texas would be in this at the end for Arch if Quinn hadn't made that unusual move that he did to get class apart from him.
Kombucha tea money.
I do think you're right, Ari. Like, honestly, I will say, I think that you have to like take it for what it is. Like, we'll see if they can. I think that there's a whole separate discussion of like, what can Arch do for Texas now that he's committed? And I think that's really interesting. I do think today is it's a big ass statement that the Manning family believes in Steve Sarkisian and probably you should too. You know what I mean? I think that is going into year two. And I understand that the fan reaction in a lot of cases is like, well, what about 5-7? What about Kansas? Like, come on, it's a joke, whatever. I think it's pretty telling that they really do. And look, all of this is, there's a lot of salesmanship to all of this, right? And I'm sure that Georgia and Alabama and all them, everybody puts their best foot forward. Clemson was in this a year ago, all that. It's interesting to me that they determined, you know, that like Texas I don't know, Sam, from based on reading your story, it seemed like at the end of the day for Arch, Texas checks like 22 of the 25 boxes, basically, in terms of what they were looking for here. It seems like they did a good job from the start of Sark getting there, of kind of getting their house in order to go win this recruitment. And now it's like, you're going to get the talent, they've got the facilities, they're going to the SEC. Like now it's just going to come down to coaching and culture. You know, can Sark do enough in year two to inspire confidence? But I think even just pulling this off probably does buy time at a place where you need to have time.
I'm going to say this slowly, and I want everybody to hear it. Has there been a recruit that has had more knowledge, more wisdom, more money, more resources, more anything to explore recruiting to the fullest potential in terms of getting to the very bottom layer of every school that he's considering? If there has been, it's equal. No one's had more resources. And yeah, after
his family, they're not going to send him to a place where they don't believe that they know what they're doing.
It's not just, you know, the ability to travel to see places. It's people who understand the quarterback position better than anybody on the face of the earth. And after all of this exploration and all of these visits and everything that he did in order to get to this point, while also not really talking about it much, just focusing and learning and coming up with a way to feel comfortable, he decided that Texas was the best place for him. Texas is the best place for him. And maybe that's because of relationships, and I know that that's important. But what statement does that make for the program when they're selling every other player that they're going to recruit moving forward?
We're not like, especially in this time we're in right now, he's not going to Texas because they're like, this is our way to achieve generational wealth. They've already got that, right? Money. It's not about this is the place we can go where he can maximize value. This is the place where he feels like he can maximize his success.
Yeah, it's I think it's a really good combination of everything. I think, like you said, I go back to the Sark part, and you mentioned Max Sark being able to do this recruitment, but he also did the same thing with Ewers. When he got the job at Alabama, that was kind of priority number one, was get Quinn Ewers, and he got really close to doing it. And if the NIL thing doesn't happen, Quinn might have flipped and just signed there right out of high school.
Yeah,
but he had already committed to Ohio State, and there just wasn't enough time for Sark to make up ground. Now he does this with Arch, and it's clear – whether it's Sarkisian's history as a quarterback, whether it's his ability or his time working with accomplished quarterbacks, whatever it is, you know, his time at Alabama with a national championship offense and Tua and Mac Jones, all that stuff helps. But it's also, like you said, the other boxes from, hey, you're in a big city. It's Austin. I think he said, Arch had said Austin kind of reminded him a little bit of New Orleans, I guess maybe, and I don't know if it was in a vibe or whatever, but his first visit there, that really stood out to him. The whole campus experience, everything, it all added up for him. And I think that combined with the relationships, combined with, I think, and Ari, you wrote this in your story today, in your column, and I agree with it. There seems to be a desire from Arch to separate himself in identity from Archie and Peyton and Eli. He's got the different number. He's going to go to a different school. They're not in the – they'll be in the SEC, but they're not in it yet. This is definitely a different path than all the other Mannings have gone, and I think maybe that desire to establish his own legacy, maybe impossible because of his last name, but at least there's an attempt to it seems to be, which I think you astutely pointed out, Ari. I think that plays into all this as well.
Is there anything that can derail this? Max, before we got on, we jokingly said, is he going to sign there? I was like, yeah, I'd be shocked if he decommitted. I guess 4-8. What is there any, all three of you guys, what could derail this?
Guys, it's Texas. I mean, when Quinn Ewers committed to Texas, I didn't anticipate the issue at the time of the eyes of Texas or any of that stuff that would kind of come in the months. Like you just don't know like what's coming down the road. So like, I think he will. And then remember, and Ari, you were leading the charge on this. As soon as Quinn Ewers decommitted, it was Tom Herman needs to be fired. Right. So it's like, I think that I'm sure I don't doubt that at this point in time, he's going to sign with Texas, but you know, stranger things have happened, obviously.
Maybe the Quinn train can derail it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it was like a really funny thought process because
I remember Jared Sittum being committed to Texas Tech. You remember this one, Sam? Jared Sittum was committed to Texas Tech, and then freshman Patrick Mahomes blows up at the end of the year, and then all of a sudden, I could go somewhere else. That might be a good idea.
But I actually think that you could make the case that the best possible scenario for Texas is that Quinn is awesome this year.
Yes.
Because if Quinn is awesome this year, then it hit. He lays the foundation of a building program.
It's the right runway he needs.
It's the right, and then you can feasibly say, hey, he's got only one more year left here because he will go to the NFL. If we learn anything from Kombucha Tea, it's that we're going to be going to the NFL the second that we have a chance. And, you know, if he's actually an awesome player and kind of lives up to the billing of what he was supposed to be, then Arch has an actual, you know, it involves sitting a year, but, you know, I think that he has an actual pathway in his head that he can see clearly of to the field. And I think sitting for a year is a pretty reasonable thing to ask if you think that that's the right place. So the thing I don't know what happens, what if Hudson Card, comes out and he plays above average football to the point where they win 8 games. He's not bad enough to bench. Quinn isn't fully enough down the line yet to take that job. And Texas just has a mediocre year. And then you go into next year and it's a head-to-head battle between two players who have never thrown a pass or, you know, whatever. Quinn has mop-up duty in some games his freshman year. I think that is more dangerous for Texas. Trust me, guys. I watched the Cardale Jones-JT Barrett battle live in front row seats with one of the best coaches that college football has ever seen, and he messed that up beyond comprehension. I cannot imagine at Texas with a coach that is still trying to get things going and then two of the most high-profile recruits of all time, like how that would go. So I think Texas is probably praying for Quinn to be good.
Y'all talk about Hudson Card like he's Stetson Bennett or something. Like he was a top five QB in his class too. Like he's still, it's not over.
He's got talent. There's no question about talent with Hudson Card. He can spin it. Guys have seen it. It's just a matter of can he translate into games and can he do it consistently? You err on the side of
Murphy stays.
Malik's got a foot injury. He's still getting over. But
yeah.
But you err on the side of numbers. And right now, then you would figure somebody's going to transfer. But if nobody does transfer when Arch signs on December 15th or whatever signing day is, then you've got four scholarship quarterbacks. You know, one of them is probably going to end up leaving at some point. But those numbers work in your favor. All you have to do is be honest and upfront and manage the expectations. I've seen how this can blow up. Max, you remember this, 2015, Texas A&M, Kyle Allen and Kyler Murray, Kevin Sumlin and that staff probably managed that as poorly as you possibly could, and both guys transferred out within a week of each other after the 2015 season ended. And Kyle was a number one quarterback in his class, and Kyler Murray was, of course, number one quarterback in his class. So it can blow up in your face if you don't manage it correctly. So this is on Sark and A.J. Milwee to have a good plan, to be honest and upfront with everybody, and just spell out the expectations and go from there. So I don't get the sense, back to your other point, I don't think there's going to be too much drama about between now and signing day, unless, like you guys said, Texas goes 4-8 or something drastically unforeseen happens. I think the way that the Manning family and the Manning camp went through the process, this doesn't feel to me like something that can just change on a whim. He's seen all these campuses so many times. He's been to Texas like 4 or 5 times. He's been to Alabama and Georgia multiple times, went through all the official visits. This has all been carefully constructed and orchestrated. So I don't see this as something that you're going to see him wavering and we're going to have drama going into signing day.
They've already watched Texas go 5-7, right?
Yeah. So, right.
Barring complete implosion this season, like, yeah, it's not really going to get – it's not going to get worse, I wouldn't think. You don't think so.
All three of us just came up with examples of high-profile quarterback battles that went south. Does anybody have an example of when it worked out? Two top five-star players that came in within a year of each other that
I'm sure
in
USC,
succession started
well,
after one another?
Like in recent years, it hasn't gone right at USC.
I mean, I guess Mac Jones, but he wasn't a five-star guy. Like,
yeah, he wasn't. He was the thing. More like, under people the radar. Are
like, yeah, well, this is the perfect runway.
Jalen Hurts and Tua was kind of a mess, but it was managed well because Nick Saban controls that program, and it didn't sabotage anything.
It would be very, very interesting to go back and look at the recruiting rankings and see what schools have signed that many five-star players.
Well, we've done the research, and some of like Florida, wasn't it John Brandt? Like sometimes guys don't pan out, so they're not good. So there's not, there's not that battle like choosing. Sometimes it's just obvious who you choose, but I want to go over because
but I think if you were to place a bet, you'd place the bet on implosion, and I think that you put yourself on a position of like, well, no, it's not even because
that's fair.
It's not because it's Texas, it's because it's a very hard situation for anybody to manage.
Yeah. So and we all the guys that we're talking about before were not as high profile as these two.
True. That's the deal.
These are two of the seven guys all time that have a perfect recruiting rating and came with tremendous amount of hype.
Sitting on Ohio State podcasts with Landis for the past year, talking about the perfect segue between Ohio State's CJ Stroud starting and Kyle McCord, a five-star quarterback who's the backup, and Quinn signing and enrolling early. And they're like, okay, well, here's how this is going to all plan out. And it's like, it lasted like literally 2 months before somebody left. So, you know,
Devin Brown wasn't even in the conversation at that time. Yes, and then they go find another guy. Yes. You just keep it going. You just go find the next one.
Ari and I talked about this earlier. We speculated that Arch was the first number one overall player in the 247 composite that committed to a school that had a losing record in the season prior to his commitment. And I looked it up, and that is the case.
Wow.
Jalen Phillips, who Ari brought up, was the eventual number one player in 2017. He committed to UCLA in April of 2016. UCLA went on to have a losing record in 2016, but at the time he committed, he was coming off the previous season, and they had a winning record, if you follow that.
That's interesting.
Here's one that's close. Ole Miss went 7-6 in 2011, Hugh Freeze's first year, and then signed Robert Kyndiche, among many others.
Yeah.
And they went 7-6. Dorial Green Beckham was signed off for an 8-5 Missouri season last year in the Big 12. So this is basically unprecedented.
And those were some examples of NIL before NIL, I suppose, a little bit. But, no, I'm kidding.
Ole Miss, are you kidding? Come on.
I do think, like, so part of, like, the upside here, because I agree with you, Ari, like, there's definitely, you can talk through a bunch of different scenarios of how this actually goes, you know, once he gets on campus. But I do think there is, like, the overall net, like, huge positive for Texas of, like, Arch Manning is also going to Texas, I think, because he believes he can get very good players to come to Texas. And if it were, I have to think that's really important to him, and that he would have gone to Georgia or Alabama if he didn't buy that he can get these guys to follow him to Texas, or at least that Texas can get the talent level. Is it going to be the same as Alabama and Georgia in 2 years? Probably not, but good enough in his estimation. And now I am interested. Now you kind of flip the switch where Arch, who's been very private during all this, but at the same time has been on these OV weekends at these other schools with these big time guys. Like, now that he goes into recruiter mode, like, what does he line up for Texas? I mean, can they get, you know, Jonte Cook and Malik Muhammad and Jaquazi Petaway and Michael Harrison Pilot, Cedric Baxter? I think they've got Anthony Hill, the five-star linebacker, coming in this weekend. Like, I am interested that effect of, you know, not just putting together a top five class, but potentially chasing top three or number one class. Like, I think that no matter how it goes with Arch Manning in Austin, like, if he gets all those other guys to Texas, like, it's going to make a huge impact, I think.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And that goes with the timing. We talked, you know, it makes so much sense for him to, if you know now, go ahead and do it and don't wait. First of all, no, it's no also drama.
Like I think it also hits different. Like if Sark calls Reuben Owens and says like, we're going to keep recruiting you and all that, like that's cool. But like if Arch Manning calls Reuben Owens and is like, why are you going to Louisville? Like, what are you doing, dude? Like, let's team up. Like, I think that has a different effect.
When it's not coming from the coach that you've heard it from a million times, it does resonate. I likened it. I was having a conversation with a follower on Twitter earlier. I likened it to Kyler Murray in 2015. Max, you remember he got some guys. He got Christian Kirk to come Texas A&M mm-hmm. with him. You know, he got Daylon Mack to come to Texas A&M with him, and he had that kind of juice.
What else happened that year? That was the year that Malik Jefferson had to be the savior for Texas football, and he brought mm-hmm. all these big time recruits in.
That's right.
And then they had to be good right away under Charlie Strong, you know. But hey, the cycle continues.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I know you're working on a story on AJ Milwee. Tell us, you know, he's a guy that, you know, if you follow college football, you know the name. But what future head coach, I'm assuming, what about him do you think that really connected with Arch and that family?
I think it's really two things. A, he was consistent in terms of communicating. You know, Nelson Stewart told me, and I wrote this in my piece earlier today, is that the two times that he was able to go visit him in the spring evaluation period, AJ got there so early that he beat Nelson Stewart there, and that he turned the weight room lights on. That's how on top of it he was, and he was in constant communication, calling him all the time. But also just, I went back to the part about the install and the offense, talking X's and O's with him and really building a relationship with him just organically, you know, sitting in the, letting him sit in the quarterback room and just seeing how he works, how he tutors. You know, last year when Arch went in June, you know, you get to work with him at the camp in June. And I talked to Terry Bowden earlier, who AJ Milwee worked with for a lot at Akron and in North Alabama. And Terry said he's a terrific teacher. He's got a great football IQ. AJ was a successful quarterback himself. He played at Division II level because he's a smaller guy. He wasn't sized to go Power Five, but he was a two-time finalist for the Harlan Hill Trophy at North Alabama. So he is a quarterback. He knows quarterback. He knows how to teach it. And he's a little bit more laid back. He's a younger guy. He's 36. You know, he was an offensive coordinator at 26, but he's a younger guy, and I think he can probably connect with Arch in a way that I think is going to really, really fit him in. And he's not an in-your-face type. He's not like Jimbo Fisher, who's going to be, you know, wear you out and, you know, cuss you out on the camera and all that stuff. Like, AJ's a much more reserved, you know, he's going to be a lot more laid back and analytical, instructional. And I think Arch and the Mannies really fed off of that. I think that really helped him.
He's a young guy too.
Yeah.
Pretty relatable.
Yeah. So I think that is really what helped them build that relationship. I think his demeanor and the way he goes about things really won them over.
Is this good for college football?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. Cause if he goes to Georgia or Alabama, and there's nothing wrong if he goes to Georgia or Alabama, but they're already national championship programs. And I'm not necessarily of the belief that Texas has to be good. I know there are some people who would say, well, you want these programs to be good and it makes it more interesting. I think there is something to it. It does make it more interesting. And if Texas can get back to being a good, consistent winning program, especially as they go into the SEC, it makes the SEC that much more interesting when they go in. Because right now, if they win in the SEC right now with the roster they have today, it's not going to go well. It's just not. They're not there yet. They're not ready yet. This could possibly spark this 23 class for Texas and get them into a talent tier. And you got the top five class last year. You got 7 offensive linemen, 8 defensive linemen. If you can bring in a bunch of high-level guys again this year, put in another top 5, maybe even a top 3 class on the heels of this Arch Manning commitment, then you're starting to stack the talent you need to compete in the SEC when you get there. That's ultimately the end of the day, is that's what's most important for them.
And Sam, you wrote about this today. I think that's an underrated part of this whole equation. Texas finished with their class 22 class and with the offensive line flurry. I mean, it's one of maybe the best offensive line class. When you're 4-8 and people are questioning your program, how do you sell a quarterback? You point to the recruiting class before and all the 4 and 5 stars. And I think that is vastly underrated, part of the equation you brought up in your story.
Yeah, no, it's you have to show a plan, and that was one thing that I think they noticed in the Manning camp was that there's a plan, there's a vision. This was Sark's first full class. He only really got to sign four guys in the previous class. One of them was Xavier Worthy. So the offensive line stunk. So we signed seven offensive linemen, and we've got Kyle Flood, who we believe is a tip-top offensive line coach. And then we've got eight defensive linemen because we know, and Sark has been in the SEC, he knows what those guys look like, and you know what you need. So that's ultimately how, when you're 5-7, you've got to sell a vision. This is how we're going to do it. And that's ultimately that's the only thing you can do, because you can't say we've done it, we've been there. They have, but it was well before Arch could, you know, throw a football. I mean, the last time they won a national championship was 2005, and the last time they've been in one was 2009. So they had to sell a future vision for making this happen.
I'm picturing a world right now. Go ahead, Max.
I was going to say it does kind of buy time. I feel like the idea that Arch is coming.
For Sark,
you can
agree 100%.
You can play Kelvin Banks and all these freshman offensive linemen this year and play Quinn and sort of, I'm not saying they're going to tank this year or anything like that, but like you can go through the freshman stuff that you need to go through this year to try and build this thing up for when Arch gets there. And you can kind of shrug and be like, yeah, we're not that good yet, but we're young and we've got, you know, the best recruit of all time coming along here. So like, I think it kind of gives you a little bit more. I know that like Texas fans aren't, you know, the most patient folks out there, but like, I think it does give you kind of that excuse for year two a little bit, like let's go young knowing that we're trying to build this thing up for Arch and for the SEC.
In the same way that you guys were talking about earlier, Quinn Ewers decommitting expedited the end of the Tom Herman era, getting Quinn Ewers back and getting Arch Manning, I think buys time, like you said, for Sark, with a question.
I was just thinking of a world when Mitch asked, is this good for college football? Okay, so Dante Moore, the quarterback dominoes are falling. The five-star quarterback out of Michigan, apparently he's got a bunch of momentum to Oregon now. You got Malachi Nelson going to USC. You have the A&M class that they signed last year.
Rashada might go to
Miami.
Like Miami.
It seems like, and like now picturing a world where Texas signs a mega class because of Arch. Like in that world, like if all those, is it possible for Miami, Oregon, Texas A&M, USC, and one other school that I'm forgetting about right now to also be awesome?
I mean, Texas Tech, based on how recruiting zone, right?
Yeah. Texas Tech. I mean, but
Notre Dame.
Is it even possible? Like, are there enough players for everybody to be awesome at the same time? It's like, I don't know if this is like a COVID thing or this is something that people said before, but can you flatten the curve of how many top 100 players go to the same five schools? Like, what if there were 11 schools that got seven top 100 players, and then 12 through 15? Like, could you, like, is that the right way to put it?
Flatten
the curve?
I'm going to blow your mind here. What if we had an 18 playoff where more people got to compete for national championships?
I don't think that
even
would
12.
Flatten the curve. I think that it would just mean there'd be more blowouts at the beginning of the year or the beginning of the thing. But I think,
yeah, Ari, I think
what if more, what if more programs had a path to a national championship?
The era of the superpower is recent, where, you know, we've always had better teams than other teams. But I think in the last, guys, tell me I'm wrong, but I think it's more in the last 6-7 years with the emergence of Alabama being so good and some of these Georgia teams. You know, maybe USC in the 2000s, but it's recent that we've had one or two teams so much better than the rest of the field.
Is that irreversible though? Like, because, like,
yeah, I think it is.
An 18 playoff in the current setup is not interesting to me. An 18 playoff in 2001 might have been. You know, when Team 8 actually has a chance in hell of beating Team 1. You know, and I don't know, maybe everybody has a different opinion about this.
Don't you follow? You're a big college baseball fan, Ari. Ole Miss, last team in the field. They're about to compete for a national championship.
Was that tonight?
Yeah.
They qualified today.
Yeah, they advanced to the finals.
Okay, I'll thank Britt for being late so you guys could finish that game if you did.
No, it was over. Like, it was a quick game. It was a pitcher's duel. It was like 2.5 hours, but thanks. You know.
There's a pitcher's duel in college baseball?
It was three.
I saw somebody pop out to 400 feet over left center the last time I watched it with you.
And you lost $100 on it.
Yeah, I just bet on Vanderbilt because Mitch likes Vanderbilt, and I watched three guys miss the ball completely and hit home runs. I was like, oh, I'm out. And
he thought the game was seven. He thought the game was seven innings. He thought Oregon State won it with a walk-off in the bottom of the seventh. He texted me. He's like, what? It's not over. I thought it was a walk-off.
I thought it was a walk-off.
Well, because it's nine innings.
I covered college softball. I didn't know if it was like that.
The
question, though, is, like, are you a person that thinks that the 18 playoff fixes the problem first? or do you think you have to fix the problem before the 18 playoff makes sense?
I think it helps. I don't think it fixes it. I think giving more teams access over a 5-year, Penn State's the program I always use. If you give a team like Penn State more access and they make two playoffs over 5 years, that helps their recruiting pitch. You say there's four or five programs like that. If those programs get two or three more top 100 kids a year, over time it flattens the curve.
I may be completely wrong about this, and we'll find out here in 5-10 years or whatever. But like I do believe that, like, let's use that example, Mitch. If Penn State can sell kids on being a playoff program as opposed to a Rose Bowl program, like, I think that's going to make a difference.
But of all the sales pitches that kids get pitched, how much do you think going to the playoff is on that list? I'd argue that it's like number five. Like, it's not like people are like, oh, well, I get to go to Georgia and maybe I'll get to make the playoff one day.
I think it's a bigger deal.
You guys only care about top 100 prospects. Like, among the top 100 prospects, that is like not number five on the list. That's much.
What would be the, what would, I don't know.
I think it's much higher, Ari.
It's
relationship with coaches, NFL draft history, location, and geography.
Relationship with coaches. We're in the portal era, buddy. What are you talking about?
But I think that we're just talking about Arch Manning committing to
Brian
Texas
Kelly.
Right now.
You're signed, Brian Kelly signed players. Your guy, Brian Kelly. It's not relationship with players.
No. I guess I just don't think that all of a sudden Penn State guys want to win playoff. I mean, if you go look at every team that's right. already made the playoff, right, they have none of them have had an uptick in recruiting after. Is Washington blowing the doors off after they made it? Did Oregon? Did any of the teams that made it in the 14 playoff era have better recruiting than Michigan? They're getting their ass kicked right now.
All right, why are there super teams in the NBA? Because guys want to win. They want to go play with other. Why would we're talking about Arch Manning getting rich.
How are we having to convince you of this?
We're just talking about Arch being able to draw guys with him. Why would they want to come with him? Because he's a pretty damn good player, and they want to win.
So that's
the thing. So yeah, is it number one thing? No, for some guys it may be NIL. For some guys it may be
NIL, NFL. Yeah,
and winning. I think those are the three things.
I think it's NFL, NIL.
No, yeah.
It depends on who it is.
At the present moment, we are talking about the best player in the history of recruiting going to a program that hasn't had a first-round pick as an offensive player since Vince Young. So, I mean, maybe it is. Maybe it's not NFL. But, like, by the way, and I don't know how that turned into a playoff debate, but I'm wondering how that's even remotely possible. That Texas has gone that long without luck, like some guy just randomly being
improbable. Yes,
if right. you go look at like the first Lower round Texas offensive fans. Players taken this year, there's like three FCS guys in there. It's like, how do you like not even just like back, especially because recruited well? It's like that is the most mind blowing stat I've heard in a long time. When somebody told me that, was it you, Sam?
Yeah.
Well, and that's why Arch like also represents. And this will be the thing that, you know, is going to be so fun to watch. Arch is really this another, but really it is a golden opportunity for Texas to get its shit together. Like, you've done the perfect job of selling this guy on the perfect vision of what it could be. And now you have to make it real.
Yeah, now you have to actually go do the thing. And boy, you better get it together before 2025 or whenever it is that you go into the SEC. The funny thing is, you bring up Vince Young. That's the last time they've landed a number one recruit overall in the country was 2002 when Vince Young signed, and it ended in a national championship. I don't know that that'll happen here, but certainly if you can increase the talent level, you help your chances.
Max, when did you live in Austin? What years?
2012 to 2019.
Okay, so you're a little young, but I'm just thinking, like, how much time we spend in the last 2 years talking Texas A&M recruiting and now Texas recruiting. And I remember the Dennis Franchione days, and Sam, what was this game, Oklahoma, 65-0 or whatever.
77-0 in through three quarters.
And just how – what a debacle that was. And then Ari's stat about Texas not having a – you know, they've had some good teams, but just how irrelevant – these two programs, which should never be irrelevant, were for off and on for a decade, and now they're just – we can't not talk about them because we're hurting.
And the thing is that for A&M, the SEC did a lot for it. The SEC and also the and perfect Johnny. Storm of Johnny yep. and Kevin Sumlin and Cliff Kingsbury that first year, going 11-2, winning the Heisman. That created a buzz and a way for them to recruit and eventually build this roster. It took time to get the roster to SEC level. And that's, I think, I keep saying for Texas fans, I think it's hard to understand until you're actually in it. It takes time to build the depth and the talent level that you need in that conference, especially with now it's going to be with Oklahoma joining as well. But it does a lot. It creates a lot of buzz, and everybody wants to play. They want to win, and they also want to play with the best. And that's the best teams are going to be in the SEC for the most part. So it has been up and down for both of those programs. A&M has been a kind of an uptick as of late, and has feels like it's found its footing in the SEC. Texas is still trying to figure it out. But if you get this right and you get the talent right and you start moving back in the direction, like Max said, it's a chance for you to figure it out finally and set yourself back on a direction to where all the Texas fans believe the program should be.
But they also need to just figure out a way to, like, you know, this is not – I'm sure you can think of, like, a business analogy for this, Ari, but, like, they need to just figure out a way to, like, win 9 games a year first. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. They just need to figure out, like, can we just do, like, 8 to 10? Can we get pretty steady at that
before
we
– simplify it, just beat the teams you're supposed to.
Don't lose to Kansas.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, sure, but then you go in the SEC, and what are the games you're supposed to win, right?
Like, yeah, I don't know,
like,
man.
That part's going to get tougher. But like, they need to figure out a way to not just like I understand everyone wants to get to the mountaintop here, but like they need to figure out a way to just get back to the MAC level of can we win 8, 9, 10, 11 games a year. And do or like even just like what you've seen with like Kirby Smart in Georgia, right? Where like, yes, they finally got to it at this point, but they built something real from year one to today to get there where you're in the mix every year. They need to figure out a way to have just like sustainable high level success, because it can't just be all or nothing all the time in year two or year three of whoever the coach is.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know, they lost to Kansas, West Virginia, and Iowa State last year. Let's start by not doing that. Let's start by not having a circus. And like I said, they've only got to 10 once since 2010. They've only got 10 win one time in that span. That you've got to get to, like you said, 9 or 10.
Like, Ari, I know covering Ohio State, like I definitely get like there's like a certain frustration that comes with like, man, you're so talented and you lost that one game a year that you couldn't lose, or you didn't play, you know, you blew it in the playoff or whatever. Like, Texas needs to just like Texas would kill to be at that level where there's that one game a year that's really bothering you, mm-hmm. but they're doing everything else right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No matter how dysfunctional it is, just to get to that, like, just to get stuck on that plateau would be huge progress for Texas.
And they actually have, to borrow your like, that runway for it. Like, it's not like they're, I don't know, understand. You guys are far more, you know, knowledgeable, and I've covered the Big 12 a lot longer than I've been living in Texas, but the Big 12 just seems like the hardest conference in the country to go undefeated in for whatever reason. Like, every gambling spread is 3. Like, I don't know why, it just always is. And like, these games are close and it's always a high scoring game, and then you have that weird low scoring game every now and then. But it's just like, when you look at the actual schedule with the talent that Texas has compiled, dismissing anybody they might face in a given year in the non-conference, why should they be losing to any of these teams? Like, it's if you ranked like the strength of schedule of every Power 5 conference, Pac-12 would be at the bottom, SEC would be at the top, Big 10 would probably be number 2, and then you can argue about ACC and Big 12 for number 3 and 4, right? So like, what?
Yeah, like, it's easy to forget, like, Baylor. You remember
Baylor's
saying,
awesome.
Like, Baylor, yeah, I mean, absolutely was not supposed to win the Big 12 last year. Like, that was not anyone's expectation. Like, they were supposed to take a nice little step in year 2. But if you're like the team that is experienced and finds a way to just survive close games, like that's how you win the Big 12 now, you know. And Texas just needs to like get to a point where they have experienced teams that are like actually tough and have gone through stuff like Baylor did last, you know, last year and end of the Rule era and all that. Like Texas needs to like get to having those veteran teams that can just survive those games that, yeah, on paper they should win based on, you know, 24/7 team talent and all that, but it ends up being a one score game in the last 5 minutes.
I just feel like the Big 12 is like the most unpredictable conference as it comes to results.
Yeah.
Like if you guys do the state of the programs and you look at the Big 12 teams, just like every single one of these teams are like, did you guys see that game X from last year? Mm-hmm. We're building something. Like everybody has
and no disrespect to Brent Venables, because I think he's going to be successful. But like, yeah, and when you take Lincoln Riley, who was like kind of the constant out of the conference, then yeah, like this year especially does feel like really hard to sort of pin down like who's supposed to win the league this year.
All right, so I want to ask you a couple things before you head out. I want to ask you guys a question. This is kind of it's one game. For some reason, I didn't watch much of it. I don't know if maybe Ohio State was playing or, you know, Washington couldn't have been playing, but it's small sample size. But Texas goes to Arkansas last year, gets run off the field. Sam, I assume you watched the game, Max.
I was there.
Yeah, okay. Did you somewhere this is a difficult question, but like take the names off the uniforms, would you walk away from there and go, man, that team in red was so much better? Or was it just the Texas wasn't ready for the moment, the crowd? Because my point is, we're talking about how Texas, they just need to get to a certain level where they're going to a conference where you got a program like Arkansas, which should not be competing with Texas, but Arkansas is probably better than they are now. So many programs like that.
That's a funny example. Sam, why don't you tell them about the QB1 situation for Arkansas? Because honestly, it does pertain to sort of this Arch situation now.
The QB1 situation. Who was the quarterback at Arkansas last year? Now I'm trying to remember.
At Texas going in the Arkansas game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hudson Card was the starting quarterback, yes. And he had that really good game against Louisiana Lafayette. Yeah. And looked great. I was like, I remember thinking, wow, optimism. This is a good-looking quarterback. And then
it was like a very professional win for the new staff.
It was
the first game. It's a good team.
It was. And
the team that Andy was convinced was going to beat Texas too.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They went into Arkansas, and that crowd and that atmosphere, it was a little too much for everybody. And Hudson Card,
that shouldn't happen to Texas.
Yeah, it shouldn't. But Hudson looked a little deer in the headlights. The offensive line was not good that night,
though. In that setting, yeah.
They got eaten alive by that atmosphere. Like it was just too much for them. Like the run defense was awful, everything. Like Arkansas was that much better at that moment. Yes. Without question. But should they have won, you know, 44-16 or whatever the score was, like on a normal day? No, I think some of that had to do with the buzzsaw that Texas walked into, because Arkansas had that game marked on the calendar. And there's a lot of hate in Arkansas, yes, for the Texas Longhorns. They rushed the field after the win. You know what I mean? It was unbelievable. So I think there was a little bit of that emotion playing into that result and why it turned out that way. Because you look at, in Max,
but you, by, you but saw by it. The end of that game, so Hudson Card is the dude. He's the dude after week one.
Mm-hmm.
He throws for 61 yards at Arkansas. And by the end of game two, he's not the starter anymore.
That's right, Casey Thompson.
and then it's Casey Thompson's turn. And so like that's just... And part of that is youth, obviously, and just sort of expecting a guy to be a stud as a redshirt freshman, and you go into tough environments, and obviously the SEC is full of them. Part of that is just sort of thinking like, well, they're more talented, or they're as talented, and that's, you know, that's not totally where Texas is at yet.
They weren't there on the line of scrimmage yet. Texas was not.
Oh, up front, sure.
That's where the difference was in that game was, and that's why. This recruiting class for Texas has 7 offensive linemen, 8 defensive linemen, because that was the night that I think Sark understood fully, we ain't there yet, and we need to figure out a way to get there really quickly.
All right, if you guys have anything else, feel free to chime in, but I've got one simple question for all three, and I'll answer two before we head out. Anything else? Are we good?
I was just looking.
I mean, you're the host here, guy. So
I know. I'm asking. I don't want to cut you off. We got a lot of smart guys here.
I did, like, one of my favorite things to do with recruiting is, like, so after Arch committed to Texas, I did make sure to go check the Georgia message boards and see what the response was.
They didn't want them.
And guess what, guys? Arch actually sucks. Georgia, it was funny
Arch is
to go
end
see
up
that.
The starting quarterback at Tulane. In
He's no Gunnar Stockton. Let's be honest, guys. Yeah. He's no Gunnar Stockton. So yeah. it's I do always kind of love that tradition of
you're a lurker.
It's just
you're
like
a
that breakup
lurker.
Effect yeah. of like we he actually sucks and we actually never wanted him.
Yeah. I love
getting there to recruit him.
I love fans' reactions to recruiting losses. You guys were talking about the win 8 or 9 consistently. The last time Texas won at least 8 games 3 straight years was 2011 to 2013 under Mack Brown.
Wow. That's crazy.
That's the last time they've won at least 8. Not 9, not 10, 8. They won 8, 3 in a row. That's the last time they've had a streak that long.
I am such a dope. What are these stats? Like, I mean, like, I'm an asshole. Like,
meanwhile, Baylor has 6 double-digit win seasons since 2011 and 3 Big 12 championships.
We got some great sound bites from this. Ari's like, I'm a dope. I'm an asshole. Humiliate
okay,
myself.
Let's ask this because I know this is an important measuring stick for y'all. Okay, so what? Like, and I want your answer on this first, Ari. What do you have to see, like in a sustained way, from Texas to feel like they are what they can be? That they not, you know, like all the back Texas's back memes aside, like what does Texas have to do over a multi-year period for us to be like, yeah, Texas can hang with, you know, the actual contenders in this sport?
I think I would like to see them sign top 6 classes during that period.
Doesn't matter what they do in the field, important. Max. It's just what they sign.
No, I mean, you're talking about what I want me to see of what to make me feel good about them.
That's so funny you say that because that is like in my experience covering Texas, like that is kind of the mentality. It's like the recruiting beat is more interesting than the team beat. The recruiting results are more interesting than the team results.
I mean,
you know?
Sam said it himself on the show. He said if they were to join the SEC right now, they wouldn't be out of their league, right?
Yeah.
So how do you address that? There's only one way to address that. And I guess maybe through the portal you can get some guys. I mean, they got Quinn through the portal. But I'd want to see just the recruiting results aren't just like stars matter and like I'm freaking out. It's also like a way to gauge a program's temperature, in my opinion. It's like if you're recruiting well, is there buzz? Are people thinking that you're headed in the right direction? Are people coming?
But I was asking about on-field. I should clarify. Yes. I was talking about on-field success. But obviously, that's not the way people have to measure Texas.
You know what has bothered me when watching Texas as I've been humiliated talking about how good they should be? Is that they always have a huge talent advantage. But for whatever reason, they're playing the other Big 12 game, on paper. You can never feel it. It never looks like they do. It always looks like it's an even game. I would like to see them assert the talent they do have against the teams that have on paper less and win games that they would have lost 3 years ago. And that doesn't just mean, or last year even, it doesn't mean winning 65-0 and winning the way that Clemson does in the ACC when they're humming. I just want to see them eke out or win, gut out wins against teams that are inferior talent-wise by using, you know, that talent. And maybe that means a few big plays down the stretch from guys that were highly recruited, or, you know, maybe it means that it just over the course of time, the athleticism, you know, over the 4-quarter period wins out. I want to see them just take care of business, you know, and I feel like that's such a weird thing to say because it's just like at the places that we talk about so much on these podcasts, just winning those games is just second nature. And it's like, I feel like Texas has to learn how to win those games.
That would be
first.
The signal that something is changing.
Yeah. Just win those. They don't have to go beat Oklahoma this year and they don't have to go to the playoff, but just handle your business in all the games that you're favored in.
For years, you know, my previous life at Athlon and do these radio interviews talking about the magazine and, you know, what does a coach need to do to keep his job or whatever? And the phrase I always use is like, not every 8-4 record is created equally. Mm-hmm. You can be 8-4. And not very good. You can beat Kansas by 3 on a late field goal. You go up to Kansas State and look bad, but barely win. I want to see them 8-4, 9-3, and beating the teams they should beat by 17 points. Again, what Ari said, you don't need to blow them out, but just it looks like a better program. So you do that next year, you go 8-4, and your average margin of victory is 11 points, not 3 points. And then you slowly build off of that. I think that's what tangible progress looks like.
Wow. 17 point win.
I just wanted to know what needed to happen for us, for Ari to feel like I was right. Texas.
Yeah. Oh, I think
I know what needs to happen for me to feel like I'm right. For them to rock shit for an entire year and make the playoff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, just one year. Not just like they're on the right track. Maybe they'll be good one day. Like my manifestation of like Texas being what I think they have the potential to being is being one of the six best teams in America that have a chance to win a title every year.
Okay.
And I feel like USC also has that same potential, you know, and I feel like those two teams are in different states, but they're the same.
I need to see him get back in the Big 12 championship game, or at least be in the mix for it at the very end, just for a couple of years. Like they don't, I don't think it has to be this year. I think if they go 8-4 this year, that's good progress. But after that, you need to be contending or getting in the Big 12 championship game until you leave the conference consistently. And if you can do that, because again, I go back to they haven't won 8 games in 3 straight years since Mack Brown. That's if you can consistently be a Big 12 factor for the rest of your time and you're in this conference, then I'll have some confidence that you're moving in the right direction. There's stability that we don't have to talk about Sarkisian's job status. We don't need to talk about, you know, Bo Davis videos leaked from the bus and, you know, monkeys and all this other stuff. Like it just needs to be.
Forgot about the monkeys.
Yeah.
I forgot about that too.
I said this when me and Andy talked about the same program last year, but I mean, last week, but it needs to not be a circus at Texas. It just literally needs to be a boring. Yes. It needs to be a boring 8-4 season this year. Just no drama. Win the games you're supposed to. Make progress, improvement in the win column, go to a bowl game, maybe win your bowl game, go 9-4, and then next year, go get yourself in the Big 12 championship game before you leave the conference.
Here's the problem that I have, because I have this fantasy that Quinn Ewers will just be a Heisman finalist next year, and they'll be awesome, but like I can't...
Do you have like future bets too? Like
No. I don't like being an idiot with my money. Okay. I like to just talk crap on podcasts. But I said in the middle of last year when Texas lost to Kansas, I like... went on Andy's show and I said, you know what? That's it. I'm out.
I remember listening to that.
The thing that scares me about this is that if Texas actually ever gets good, I can't claim it if I'm out. You know what I mean? So it's like,
so are you out or not right now?
Exactly. You got to make the decision. Yeah. In or out.
Mitch, Mike, can you guys drop in the Godfather scene here?
Where... Every time I'm out, they pull me back.
All right. Okay. We're going to end with this. 2000, it's the year is 2023. It's week 7. It's 82 degrees in Austin. I don't know who they're playing because I don't have the schedule. Max Olson, who's the starting quarterback for the Texas Longhorns?
It's 65 degrees in Provo. I'm going to correct you there.
Okay.
It could be in Houston.
Max, answer the question. Who's the starting quarterback in week 7?
The middle of 23?
Yes. Okay, I'll go first.
The middle of 23, I'd say Arch Manning.
I say Quinn Ewers.
I say Quinn Ewers. In the middle of 23, I think he's still a starter. I think Arch plays in red shirts, plays 4 games. And he may not
answer the question, Sam.
It's Quinn. It's Quinn.
Ari, I don't think this is the biggest moment of your life, Ari.
Cade Klubnik. That's how this stuff
is. Awesome answer.
But this is how stuff goes, though, guys. We've spent so many I've spent 10 years on podcasts trying to Tate Martell podcasts, guys. And it's just like Justin Fields is the quarterback. So like I've like learned over the course of 10 years of trying to lay out the perfect red carpet of how it's going to look like that it literally not once has ever mapped out the way that you think it will be. I think that the safe answer would be Quinn Ewers. Because your hope is that he is who he's supposed to be, and if he is who he's supposed to be, then that's the way it works out. But if it's Arch Manning, then you're going to have more Texas anarchy, and I think I'm going to say Arch.
Okay. So
it's like, but you're right. There's like Sam, isn't there like a non-zero chance the answer is like Jalen Milroe? You know what I mean? Like some guy that's not even available at the moment.
Does Hudson Card still have eligibility in 23?
Absolutely.
Like, of course, y'all think he's like playing for SMU by then, but like he may be the guy at Texas. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
I would love to know how Hudson...
be Preston Stone at Texas.
That's right.
Could be.
I would love to know how Hudson Card has been doing today, and how he's been listening to us talk about Quinn all this last few months, and now we're talking about
Two of the top quarterback recruits of all time coming.
Ari, if you're in that room and they're like, "Hey, just let you know, we're going to, you know, Quinn just hit the portal. We're going to recruit him. Are you like, okay, cool. Hey, by the way, Arch is coming. Oh, yeah. Cool. All right.
Yeah, I love competition. Cool. I love competition.
Is that how you'd react if they're telling you, hey, these two guys are coming to take everything from you?
I kind of feel like once Quinn came, it was already out of the bag. Like, what's this going to do? Like, you know.
Yeah, Casey Thompson read the room on that one and was like, okay, I see what's going on here.
Also, I think being SMU starting quarterback is a pretty great gig. Because they play in a really fun offense. You get to play in Texas and you can get drafted. I mean, didn't Shane Buechele get drafted?
I don't know if he got drafted, but he's in a lot of
rookie cards flying around in the football card market that I've seen. But he's on the Chiefs, right?
He's in the league. Yeah, that's right.
I'm not wrong with
SMU. Pony up, baby. And they've got they're putting out Transams on the Twitter account now, so they're getting the band back together, baby.
Let's go.
Okay. Now, let me be like really, really morbid and unnecessary to finish this. Okay.
Okay.
If Arch Manning gets to Texas, and regardless of who's playing quarterback there, if Arch Manning gets to Texas and by the end of his first semester there, he's like, this place is just like a circus. It's a shit show, right? Like, don't you think that guy and his family are packing their bags pretty quick? Like, I'd like to believe that Arch Manning is in this for 3-4 years, but like the way things are now, and like we never could have foreseen that Caleb Williams would leave Oklahoma, right? Like stuff happens that you can't anticipate from day one. Justin Fields, same thing, right? But like if he gets there and it's not what he thinks it is, like how long is he really going to stay there when every coach in the country is going to be telling him like, hey, don't what are you doing there? Get out of there.
Yeah, I think you're able to recognize it. Yeah, it's unanswerable, like Sam said. But I think he of all people, I think it's your point, Max. He would be able to recognize it. Like he's like, this is the way it's supposed
to be. True. Yeah, it would be hard to BS him on that. I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's why it took so long in this process is because to hopefully alleviate that. Like you said, I agree. I think he's probably in it for the long haul. But yeah, if you have a circus like you did this year, yeah, I wouldn't imagine that's a conducive environment that the Mannings would want to be around. So,
do you think during Arch Manning's next recruitment, he'll talk to the media?
He's just going to sign with Willie Fritz.
We're at the joke phase of the podcast now, right? Let's all have a good time.
So. All right. Well,
I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying, like, I feel like Texas did all the right stuff here to convince them to commit. I feel like they're going to have to continue to, like, you know, like when you have company over, like, kind of keep the house clean.
Like I said, a boring 2022 can get you really in good shape for 2023.
They convinced Arch to go on the date. Now at dinner, they just can't, you know, throw up all over the place or, you know, can't get too drunk and throw up. So, all right, Ari, since this is technically still Stars Matter, your job on Stars Matter is to take us out. Can you do that?
Oh, well, Mitch, what was the last thing you had for us? There was something.
That was it. It was the
trivia.
It was, well, the trivia was going to be about, is he the first guy in the 247 era? But I just kind of read it as a fact. So the thing I had was the week 7, 2023, who was going to be the starting quarterback at Texas. Okay. So, Ari?
You guys are so money. It was really a pleasure talking about this with you. That was Stars Matter. Thanks. We'll catch you next week.